From the NHL offices in New York City, welcome to NHL Fantasy on Ice. Rob and Pete wonder what went wrong with the New York Islanders and discuss what the chances are of Carolina actually winning the Cup. What do they make of Tortorella's guarantee? And should Pavelski lace him up for Game 6? Plus, players to watch and predictions for the decisive Game 7 in St. Louis.
Welcome back, everybody. Pete and Rob here with you, talking fantasy, talking Stanley Cup playoffs. Rob, welcome back from Europe.
Thank you, Pete. Good to be back. Had a nice little European vacation. Went to Paris to see some family and then Amsterdam to see the Ajax game. So for any international sports fans, that was really one of the most unique experiences.
Ajax beat my team, Juventus, a couple of weeks ago, but I'm sure they were all jazzed up about that. And we're all amped up about what's going on in the Stanley Cup playoffs this week. Monday, we got two Game 6s. Tuesday, we got a Game 7 epic clash between the Blues and the Stars. Were you able to keep in tune with everything going on here?
I was. I spent my whole jet-lagged weekend catching the games, and I cannot say this enough. That Boston-Columbus series, I think, in my opinion, has been one of the best of the playoffs so far. I'm so excited for Game 6. Both of these teams are fighting tooth and nail, it seems like, for every goal in that series. So, to me, that's the one on the slate I'm most excited for.
You had the international data going on the trip in Europe. I love it. But yeah, you're totally right about Boston and Columbus. This series has been so even from the early series overtime games, so many one goal games, and then that finish in Game 5 was incredible. There were 5 goals scored in the final 10 minutes of the game, back and forth. Columbus, Boston, Pasternak finally stepped up in this series and looks like the elite player that we've seen all year.
Him and Brad Marchand are just, they found another level I didn't even think was possible, even though they were already two elite players. They are playing lights out. And keep in mind, they are doing it against some of the hardest matchups in the NHL against Seth Jones, who is really one of the league's best defensemen. So you cannot take what they're doing lightly. And as I was saying a little bit earlier this morning when we were catching up, Patrice Bergeron is playing the role of a 200-foot center, which is great for the playoffs. But if he starts scoring too, because he put up 7 shots on goal in their last game, if those goals start going in for him too, this Boston team might be unbeatable.
And he had a huge game last week, so the whole top line's been going. Boston's won 2 in a row, chance to close this thing out. Tortorella guaranteed that the Blue Jackets would take it back to Game 7 in Boston. Kind of did the same thing last year, though, when Columbus lost all 3 home games. So not exactly the best track record for the guy, but you got to love how Columbus is staying so competitive through thick and thin under Torts here in the playoffs.
I respect that, but I'm definitely staying on the side of Boston. And when we saw Charlie McAvoy sell out feet first dive to block that Artemi Panarin shot, which, by the way, was a complete laser beam. And McAvoy just kind of got up and trying to skate it off slowly. But still, I mean, that is the stuff I'm talking about for the Boston Bruins. That team is bought in on all cylinders at every single position, including their goalie Tuukka Rask, too.
Rask has had a great series, had the 39 saves in Game 4, and that game in Game 5 was kind of, it was a goalie duel early, and then it kind of got more up-tempo, and I thought that he still made the big saves late to get the edge on Bobrovsky, but what a great goalie matchup. And you mentioned the McAvoy taking a bullet on the shot by Panarin at the end of the game. There was also that huge defensive play, Brandon Carlo, huge, just stopping Panarin in his tracks, and then that went the other way, leading to Pasternak's game-winning goal. So that was a huge defensive plays. Defense to offense wins championships.
And as much as I do think Boston will take care of business in Game 6, I just want to note this could potentially be the last night where we have 2 games in one night. So kind of that sad time of year when the playoffs are kind of dwindling down, but the matchups are getting better, better and better. So I do think that Columbus team stands a good chance in Game 6, but it's going to have to come from their line stability. John Tortorella was switching the lines almost every other shift in that game. Finally, they got traction in the third period there, but to me, that's a really interesting storyline heading into Game 6. Who's going to skate alongside Panarin? Who's going to skate alongside DeShane? I'm not sure either way, so that's one of the things I think matchup-wise at Boston, even though they're on the road for that game, they have an edge there.
And there were some new contributors in that game for Columbus. Columbus, there was Kukin, mm-hmm. who not many people have probably ever heard his name, but he scored the tying goal to make it 3-3, defenseman. It was the first goal of his NHL career in 50-plus games. And then there was Vladislav Gavrikov, who made his NHL debut. He played in the KHL earlier this year. Was pretty productive, but looked pretty solid in his debut playing with David Savard.
And he played nearly 15 minutes, so you could tell, even though it was his first NHL game ever, that he could play North American-style hockey. So I'm really excited to see what his ceiling is. Maybe he gets on the board tonight via an assist or a secondary assist, something like that, but certainly a player to keep an eye on. I think it's just hard for Columbus when you do have Seth Jones and Zach Werenski. To have anybody else in your lineup from their blue line seems really kind of out of left field.
It's true. I was looking, though, so Marcus Nuttavaara, remember back to that game two against the Lightning, he's never come back. He's still been out with an injury, so they have the opportunity to integrate new players and have these guys chip in, hopefully for their sake, to force a game seven. But one guy that has made a big impact for the second straight round now, David Backes, coming in off the bench pretty much, healthy scratch, inserted into the lineup, has a couple of assists in this series, and is playing on that second line with David Krejci.
David Krejci is probably the most valuable Bruins forward to have in your lineup, pound for pound, dollar for dollar. You're going to save money not spending up for Brad Marchand or Pasternak, which at this point looks like a minus play to me. But that being said, Krejci is definitely a value play in the $6,000 range. He seems to be on the score sheet every night, whether it's in a goal or an assist, and he's playing a ton of minutes at even strength. So you get all sorts of different exposure with him. And now that he has David Backes on his wing, Backes is up to 3 assists in the series, I believe. So that's a play, too, that you could do a little contrarian stack. And maybe it's those guys that get the job done in a Game 6 or Game 7.
And Backes is nowhere near the player he used to be, but just the fact that Boston can throw him into the lineup and get a spark, because they've needed multiple sparks in this postseason, whether it was against the Leafs or here against the Blue Jackets. So looking ahead to Game 6, I mean, it seems like you like the Bruins. I'm thinking maybe this is the time where the big dogs finally take care of business, close this thing out, and stop playing with fire. They can't afford, whether it's the Sharks or the Bruins, they can't afford to get to a Game 7 against these sneaky teams.
They cannot. Imagine Artemi Panarin in Game 7. That's just, a situation you want to avoid at all costs. Same thing with Sergei Bobrovsky. He's played relatively well in this series, even dating back to the third period in Game 5. I mean, that Pasternak goal off the fake shot pass by Marchand, I don't think any goaltender was stopping that puck. And Bobrovsky nearly slid over and made that pad save. So really, I think the Bruins need to get the job done in Game 6 to avoid any at-home catastrophe, any potential upset for this Columbus team to keep rolling, which is a great story. But this Boston team, to me, they really are capable of big things, and it starts tonight. They're going to win this game, and they are going to move into the Eastern Conference Final, where they will clean up the Carolina Hurricanes.
So the Hurricanes were a wild card team. Clean up. I mean, we should take this team a little bit seriously for what they've done in sweeping the New York Islanders. Mm-hmm. But it's crazy how all four wild card teams could feasibly make the Conference Final, which I think is a little ridiculous if it were to happen, just because of how much effort it takes to finish so high in the standings for all these top teams. So I do think the top teams will hold true in these later stages of the second round, from St. Louis to Boston, San Jose. I expect at least two of those teams to advance to the Conference Final when it's all said and done.
And that was a bold saying by me, but the Carolina Hurricanes, they are first in shot attempts plus 120 through the whole playoffs out of any team, which is very on brand with the way they play. So I do give credit to the Carolina Hurricanes. But let's turn our attention to another Game 6 out west. San Jose, one win away from advancing to the Western Conference Final. They won against Colorado. Colorado looked a little flat in Game 5, but Philip Grubauer was really impressive. That thing could have gotten out of hand, in my opinion. So I'm excited to see what both teams bring here in Game 6.
The goalies have been really strong in this series as well. We were just talking about Bob and Tuukka, but yeah, Grubauer and Jones. Grubauer 925 in the series, Jones 926. So razor thin margin, very little margin for error here. And for the Sharks, I think in Game 5 it came down to shutting down Nathan MacKinnon. It was the first time in the series that they held him without a point. They held him to one shot on goal. If that carries over to Game 6, say goodbye to the Colorado Avalanche. I don't think it's going to come that easy, though. MacKinnon probably going to come back with a fury here.
I think the player, in my opinion, that's gained the most fantasy value in the entire playoffs for the forward position is Tomáš Hertl. He's been playing 20 22-plus minutes per game, which is third in the playoffs between behind McKinnon and Landeskog. So you can already see, just by reading the box scores, that Hurdle has elevated his role to elite status. Next season, when we're writing about Tomas Hurdle, we are going to be putting the word elite in front of his name.
I think it's a fair thing to say that he had 70-plus points in the regular season and has taken it a step further. He even had a couple of down games, but at home, actually in the playoffs, nobody in the entire league has been better in home games. 11 points in 7 home games for Hurdle. We know what he did in the dire straits of the series against Vegas, lifting the Sharks back up from the dead, and then came through in a big way with 2 goals, including that one at the end of the second period. It was another emotional game for the Sharks. They got the goal disallowed in the first period. They fell behind with about 3 minutes to go in the second, and then Hurdle had the deflection that brought them back into the game at the perfect time.
And he scored in that the kind of 2 chippy style goals right in front of the net in that game, which, as we know from watching the playoffs year in and year out, those are the goals that win you the games. So I love to see that from Hurdle. And he also has 6 power play points in this playoffs, which is tied for first too. So there's something about Tomas Hurdle that's just working here to get those points. Say what you want about Logan Couture. He's been playing out of this world too. But it's really the guy that I'm focused in the San Jose Sharks team is Tomas Hurdle.
And I'm focused on Mark-Edward Vlasic, because I was looking, when he's played a full game this postseason, the Sharks are 7-2, and he goes completely in line with shutting down Nathan McKinnon. He was the guy that did it in game number 5. So it's been in coordination with the return to strong play of Jones, return of good health to Mark-Edward Vlasic. And yeah, the Sharks look very dangerous right now. And there are some crazy stats involving the Sharks in low-scoring games. So they're 2-2 in this postseason when scoring 2 goals or fewer, but there is 38-0 this season, regular season and playoffs, when allowing 2 or fewer goals. And then they were 0-17 in the regular season when scoring 2 or fewer. So when they play low scoring hockey, it seems like they're learning to win those games, but all season long, that's where the disastrous inconsistency was. When Martin Jones was bad, they couldn't win a game. Martin Jones is coming to play here in the playoffs and is, you know, they're learning to win those type of low scoring games.
Well, without Joe Pavelski out, or with maybe potentially out, I don't know, it looks like he's traveling with the team for game 6. It looks like he could return, could play in that game. I hope to see him back after that kind of scary incident in the first round against the Vegas Golden Knights. But with Joe Pavelski potentially back in the lineup for either game 6 or game 7, it's really kind of scary to me that this team could take yet another step forward, add another offensive punch that would, again, be very difficult for a Colorado defense to stop, which, you know, let's call a spade here. Colorado, when you think of that team, you don't think of their defense.
I think that Joe Pavelski, I don't know if I would rush him back for game 6. What do you think about this?
I would, 100%, and I wouldn't waver on it, because this Sharks team cannot afford to kind of putz around like they did a little bit in the first round. They need to put the clasps down. They need to win game 6. You cannot, and I would not. If Colorado wins game 6, I would bet on Nathan McKinnon to win game 7. I do not want to face number 29, because you know why? Jared Bednar could play McKinnon close to 30 minutes in that game 7. He could play Landeskog close to 30 minutes. He could play Tyson Barrie close to 30 minutes, and I really do not like the Sharks' chances in that scenario.
And McKinnon is one of those guys that's like McDavid. They're rare breed, full steam. He could play 30 minutes and still break through the defense like it's nothing. So, yeah, very dangerous waters if the Sharks don't win game 6. But yeah, I think that in the absence of Pavelski, we've seen a couple of different guys step up. One guy that has not really stepped up in this series, Evander Kane, has been held without a point in 4 of the 5 games. Do you think that maybe they rushed to bring Pavelski back just because of the inconsistent secondary scoring a little bit?
Probably. Kane does have a good shot total in the playoffs, though, so I think that is floodgate city for them. But with guys like Hurdle and Couture kind of leading the way, and then you look at the back end, Erik Karlsson up to 11 assists very quietly. No one's really talking about Karlsson this playoffs, but he doesn't have a goal. And we saw this. I don't know what happens here, because Karlsson, keep in mind, he's scored 20-plus before in the regular season, I think multiple times. But when he plays in the playoffs, he does not score. That crazy run with the Senators a couple years ago when they played the Penguins, I think he had 2 goals in 19 playoff games. So I just have this gut feeling that Karlsson's going to get one, and it's probably going to be a deciding goal in Game 6 or Game 7 if they go there.
It's weird. It was kind of like how his regular season was going. For a while, he was not really playing that great, still racking up assists quietly. He has had some rocket shots, though, in the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if Carlson gets a goal here in Game 6 to lift the Sharks over the top. But from the Avalanche standpoint, who is it going to be other than MacKinnon to step up in this Game 6? I mean, I've seen stuff I've liked from Cale Makar, but clearly it comes down to those top dogs, I think.
I liked Colin Wilson's performance in a couple of the games. He's been really noticeable.
Been a good sleeper for you. You picked him good, before the series.
Good sleeper pick there for sure. But again, I think you're right. It's hard. That's what this Colorado team, the glaring weakness, it's hard to really dig deep and say, oh, I feel like this guy's going to step up, when that's never really happened before. So it is going to be number 95 or number 29, you know, or 92. That's really kind of the crew there. And they're so good that they can step up and they can win the series. But, you know, to me, it's going to fall on Philip Grubauer's shoulders. If he has another game like Game 5, that might really frustrate the Sharks. And, hey, maybe the Avs, although they were a little flat, if they get one kind of bouncy, fluky goal, could be a different story.
You know who's had a lot of grade A scoring chances in this series but hasn't been cashing in? Carl Soderberg, and maybe he could help them combat, whether or not Pavelski comes back. They have a two-headed monster at center with, actually three, with Thornton, Couture, and Hurdle. So they maybe need something from their second-line center and Carl Soderberg here in Game 6 at home.
Well, hopefully we get one Game 7 out of those two Game 6s, but we do have a confirmed Game 7 for St. Louis-Dallas, which has been one of the craziest series in terms of sort of momentum swings. It seems like one time Dallas puts their foot down, looks great, and then the next game St. Louis comes back and puts their foot down. So this game, really, if we learn from the first round, Game 7s in the first round, this one's going to be a real treat.
It's very exciting because St. Louis is arguably the most resilient team out there with what they've overcome this season from January 1st on. Dallas is a team that's starting to hit its stride at the right time of year, which is what makes this series so intriguing, because you have the new blood of Dallas, a bunch of rookies contributing. You got star-studded lines, first two lines, and then you got those guys in St. Louis that have been here for years. And I was looking back, so these two teams played each other in Game 7 in 2016, and there were a bunch of Blues players from that roster still on the current roster. So you got to imagine that maybe the guys who were involved in that game have it in the back of their minds entering Game 7, especially the guys in Dallas, because I know Tyler Seguin was injured in that game. Ben Bishop wasn't on the team yet, so maybe they try to have that extra edge.
And speaking of Ben Bishop, he took that shot from Colton Parayko, hit his collarbone, fell down on the ice, looked pretty serious at the time. Their backup came in, made a couple saves, but Jim Montgomery, their head coach, after the game said it's not a big deal. Ben Bishop will be ready to go for Game 7. I love the confidence there right away. They kind of just shoved that under the rug, moved on, case closed. We're going to go to St. Louis. We're playing Game 7. Bishop's good to go.
They better hope Ben Bishop is good to go, because he has two Game 7s in his career, both shutouts.
Wow.
And he's the best goalie in the league this season. We could both agree on that.
But that being said, Jaden Schwartz looks to have the serious clinching kryptonite, whatever it is. And in round one against Winnipeg, I mean, he had a hat trick in the third period, I think. So that was absolutely ridiculous. And then in this series, he seems to be the guy that gets the goals. It's really unthinkable. Vladimir Tarasenko, their best goal scorer, their best pure goal scorer, has five goals, I think four of which have come on the power play, and he has no assists in the series. So their best goal scorer is doing pretty much not much, and then Jaden Schwartz on the second line, or the first line now, whatever you want to call it, is just cashing in opportunity after opportunity.
He's got like nine shots in his past two games. He has eight goals in his past eight games, Jaden Schwartz. That's one that I'll toot my horn on, because I had him as a X factor in the first round. He came up big and actually has been a big X factor here in the second round with a multi-point game in Game 6 facing elimination in Dallas.
And I think he probably joins that Tomas Hertl conversation of fantasy forwards to gain value in the playoffs. I mean, Schwartz, he's got to be top five, if not second now. It just seems like there's nothing that can stop this guy at even strength.
So for Dallas's side, who are you looking at in this Game 7? Because this is kind of – history's not on their side. They don't have a ton of Game 7 experience, but do you think maybe that benefits them with some of these rookies? I know that – so, like, Heiskanen has had some pretty dishes, and Zuccarello as well. Zuccarello has way more assists than Heiskanen in this series, but these are guys that are generating a ton of offense. I could see Heiskanen scoring a big goal or dishing out a big assist here in this Game 7.
Well, I was down in the archives pulling some stats this morning, and here's what I got for you. Okay, Radulov, tied for first in the playoffs with 49 shots on goal. Seguin, tied for third with 47 shots on goal, and Jamie Benn is 11th quietly with 40 shots on goal. And so they haven't been going in for Jamie Benn. So that's one player, could be Floodgate City. But to me, I do like the Dallas rookies. I do like their role players, but it's that top line. When those guys fire the puck like that, if they each have 5-plus shots in Game 7, Dallas is going to win that game.
So some guys going back into the archives for Game 7 stats for the St. Louis Blues. So it's Robbie Fabry, actually, who's been kind of third or fourth line, chipping in here and there. He actually has 4 points in 2 career Game 7s, which is insane. And then there are guys like Jaden Schwartz, 2 assists, Colton Parayko, who's been a big difference maker. Mm-hmm. I think for the Blues, if they're going to win this game, they got to get the power play in order. They're 2-for-20 in the series, and their defensemen producing points, whether it's Pietrangelo or Parayko, that has been in their wins. That's been the biggest difference for me compared to Dallas, which has surprised me.
I agree. That's a good sort of sub-storyline for the Blues to kind of take pressures off their forwards when their back end gets going. But this Dallas team, they have something special this year. I think it's my favorite upset so far. The way that Ben Bishop kind of dictates the pace of the game is really something special. And then, like I said, if their top guys get going, I think this thing's over. In Dallas, they're 30-22 in potential series-clinching games. They do have a better record there at home in that stat, but nonetheless, there's something about that team. There's something in that Dallas city this year that's just worked out well, and I think big credit to their head coach, Jim Montgomery, because he's got all these young guys buying in. Rupi Hintz came out of the woodwork, is playing really well. The Matt Zuccarello trade, probably one of the most underrated deadline acquisitions, and then you have the role players stepping up too. Blake Komos had a decent series. Those guys have been pretty noticeable.
Even Jason Spezza has a bunch of points in the series and has really good career playoff numbers. We know that when he used to be an elite player, but even playing on the fourth line, he's been contributing, and that's a guy that I would want to have on my side entering game number 7. And now for the Blues, who are going back home, they're 5-1 on the road and they're 2-4 at home. They got booed off the ice in game number 5. Are you worried about St. Louis's mental game going into game 7, knowing that if one twist or turn goes against them, maybe this crowd doesn't really have their back?
I'm worried. Yeah, I don't. That's a pretty bizarre stat. I haven't heard. It's normally the opposite, right? So forget home ice. I mean, they don't want to play there, but they're gonna have to figure out a way to do it. And led by their rookie goaltender Jordan Binnington, who has been one of the best stories of the season. I just think that Blues team, they've overcome so much. Starting from December, mid-December on, their coach is up for the Jack Adams. Great story there. But to me, you know what? This Dallas team, they have the real trio that can get it done. They have the guys that can log big minutes, big shots, big goals. I mean, all three of those guys can score 40-plus goals in a season. I think they've all done it before. So that, to me, I love that Dallas team. I love their offensive firepower. And now they've got guys like Miro Heiskanen. They've got guys like John Klingberg that can log big minutes, skate like Bobby Orr out there. That, to me, is a fun team to watch. And now that Ben Bishop's there, confirmed for Game 7, I'm all in on the Big D.
And there have been some young guys on the other side that have produced for the Blues. There's been Sundqvist, a couple of big assists. There was Sammy Blaze, had that rocket shot at the end of the game to kind of suck the whatever life was left in the Dallas building out of their system. So they have some rookies as well. This is going to be a great game. Sounds like you got Dallas. I got St. Louis. Let's move on now to the Carolina Hurricanes. So there has been no doubt about what the best atmosphere here in the playoffs has been, in my opinion. It's been Carolina. They're undefeated at home. They swept clean the New York Islanders, who had a first-round sweep of their own. First reaction to what has happened, because we haven't even been able to really talk about this because I haven't seen you in a week.
What is there to say? This Carolina team, there's something really special going on. I think credit to their coach, Rod Brind'Amour. The guys look like they'd run through a wall for him. But their shot attempts, they're just shooting the puck from everywhere. Whatever you want to say, if they're getting clean goals, if they're not getting clean goals, it doesn't matter. They're getting a lot of goals. They're scoring well. All the lines are rolling. Svechnikov's back now. Scored in the last game, game 4, against the New York Islanders. Good to see that. I'm excited to see what they can do with a healthy lineup. But again, you know, Mrazek went down. McElhinney's got the best save percentage in the playoffs now, 957. Champagne problem, in my opinion, to have two good goalies like that. But, you know, I think they're going to run out of steam here if they play a team like Boston.
So McElhinney allowed a stinker goal at the end of that game. Still had a .947 save percentage. Played more than half of the series after the injury to Mrazek. What do you do for game one? I know it's maybe about a week away whenever game one is going to be, but if Mrazek is healthy, is he the starter here?
I have no idea. I wish we could phone a friend in Goalie Master to see what he would do, because, like I said, this is a good problem to have. I think the fact that we're even talking about this is a luxury, right? I mean, it's not like Mrazek played terribly. Now McElhinney stepped up and, you know, they're going to ride him out. It's like, okay, we've got two good goalies. Either one can get it done. Either has proven all season long that they can win games. So, man, this Carolina team.
Carolina's gotten some great production from its best players in the second round. I mean, right, Aho was non-existent for a while. Mm-hmm. Teravainen was a little shaky. Both of those guys were a point per game or better. Justin Williams, great to see him a part of this success, this resurgence of the Storm in Carolina, scoring in Game 3 at home and also Game 4 at home. So they have, it seems like, the perfect blend of leadership and young emerging players. My question is, can this team actually win the Stanley Cup? Because now they're among the final four. Some places have them as the favorites right now, which I think is a little disrespectful to teams like Boston and San Jose and even St. Louis, who still remain in the potential Final Four field. What are your thoughts on the Canes potentially lifting the cup in a couple of weeks?
Well, they have swagger. And I don't know if you saw the clip of Dougie Hamilton in the handshake line, but
I did.
He tapped Brock Nelson on the helmet. To kind of imitate what Brock Nelson did to Peter Mrazek, I think, in game one or two. So that, to me, there's like that little stuff that that Carolina team has. Their sort of war with the hockey media in Canada. It's funny stuff, but in all seriousness, that team can play. And the plus 120 shot attempts being first in the playoffs, second is Boston Bruins at plus 55. So if those are the two teams in the Eastern Conference Final, we're probably looking at a long series.
It's crazy, too, with all the injuries that they've overcome. I mean, Svechnikov came back. Mrazek didn't play the last two games of the series. Ferland still out. Trevor Van Riemsdyk out for the rest of the playoffs. A couple other guys have been banged up. It hasn't mattered. They've gotten goals from – it's ridiculous. They're getting goals from, like, Greg McKegg. They're getting goals from almost point per game in the playoffs from Warren Fogle. I mean, does this continue?
Yeah, he's skating on the top line now, Warren Fogle. He was playing with Aho in their last game. So it's like this guy went from the third line all season to playing with one of the best players in the playoffs. It's a good story, for sure. I'm excited to see it, and I think it's been nice that we've had John Isner, big Kane fan, on the program a couple times, because dating back to December when he came on the program for the first time, he said this Carolina team can play. They just weren't doing it at the time. Now they're in the Eastern Conference Final.
Right. When we talked to him the first time, they weren't really playing that great. It was really from January on for Carolina. And I actually messaged John the other day because he went to the Stars game, and then he flew to the, I think he's dealing with an injury. Mm-hmm. We hope he feels better, but he's flew from Dallas to Carolina, went to the game four, I think, where they swept the Islanders. I mean, this guy's a warrior. And I told him that we could see maybe the Isner Bowl in the Cup Final. It hasn't been ruled out yet.
Oh, wait, Dallas,
and he
Carolina?
Loved it. Yeah. With the two teams he roots for. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. A little postmortem here for the New York Islanders. They swept the Pittsburgh Penguins in round one and then got swept in round two. And not to go back into this at length, Pete, but we've been saying this, I think, since November. Their power play, it wasn't going to fool anybody. It wasn't going to scare anybody. And sure enough, in the second round, it's completely flat. It was basically 5-on-5 play even when they were on a man advantage. So that, to me, was the icing on the cake for that team.
The offense just completely dried up, whether it was Eberle, Nelson, Anders Lee had one goal in two playoff rounds, and it was an empty netter. That's not good for his – maybe he'll make a little less moving forward. He's hitting the free agent market. But that's a key storyline for the Islanders moving forward. I mean, this was a tremendous story, just like Carolina was, and they really went toe-to-toe with each other in games one and two. Carolina eked those games out and then was outstanding in the two home games. So full marks to the Hurricanes for getting the sweep done. I didn't think it was going to happen. Even up until game four, I still thought the Islanders maybe had a push, but Carolina really treated that game like it was like a game seven or an elimination game. So yeah, for the Islanders, it's a little bit of a complicated ending, I think, for them, to say the least.
It's hard to see where they go from here in terms of fantasy value, because they were that great. I think one of our favorite teams to cherry pick in the first couple weeks on the waiver wire, and then we kind of rode their value all season long, kind of maybe waiting for it to end, but it never ended. So now we're going to see guys like Jordan Eberle, who's also a UFA. He played great in round one, but then kind of ran out of steam in round two. So again, similar thing to Lee there, where his contract status, because Eberle, he had a down regular season, very, very down production-wise. So that might be a team-friendly deal if he stays, in which case I would like his fantasy value. But to me, it's just really hard to get a pulse. Did this team overachieve? Did they, you know what I mean? Like, what was your makeup at the end of the season?
They definitely overachieved. I think they'll probably take a little step back next year, especially, I mean, hopefully for their sake, they don't lose half of their top six, which is in a real danger when you look at Lee, Eberle, and Nelson, all potential UFAs. It remains to be seen what's going to happen with Robin Lehner. Amazing story on and off the ice. Was great through two, three games in the second round. I thought maybe deserved better. Ended up getting pulled in game four, so not the ending that he had in mind. But Robin Lehner certainly deserves to stay, and I think they should bring him back and keep at least that elite tandem of Greiss and Lehner, because really that's probably the biggest reason. The offense hasn't been there in the playoffs and even all year, but I think the goaltending has been second to none in the entire league.
And not to open a can of worms here, but do you think that Thomas Greiss should have had consideration to start either game three or four?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Carolina earned it, I think, but I probably would have started him in game four. We talked about it in the pod last week. It was kind of like you try to put your best foot forward, try to give your team a spark. They started Lehner. They scored in the first 3 minutes of the game, so far so good. But then, of course, Carolina responded so well. And one thing that really was underrated in that series, a couple of key goals came from the forecheck of Sebastian Aho, whether it was that tie-breaking goal in game three, and then I think the second goal to put Carolina ahead for good in game four, both came from forechecking plays from Sebastian Aho.
Well, at least we've got two game sixes on Monday night and then a big game seven, at least one on Tuesday so far. So I'm excited for this week of hockey and soak it up while you can. This is really the best time of year, but I already feel like it's going by too quickly. So, you know, if you want to catch me tonight, I'll definitely be in front of my TV watching every single game.
And hit us up with any questions if you're playing DFS. Subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. Subscribe for free. And also check out NHL Executive Suite and NHL Draft Class, two other podcasts in the new NHL Podcast Network. So for Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, we'll talk to you again later in the week. Thanks so much for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.